Since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, the U.S. Congress has repeatedly extended regulatory flexibilities that facilitate access to telehealth services for Medicare beneficiaries. But disruptions in recent months and continued uncertainty about long-term policy have resulted in barriers to access. I'm Stephen Morrissey, Managing Editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Tara Sklar, Faculty Director of the Health Law and Policy Program at the University of Arizona James E. Rogers College of Law, and Associate Director of Telehealth Law and Policy at the University of Arizona College of Medicine Tucson's Arizona Telemedicine Program. Professor Sklar has co-authored a perspective article about telehealth payment policy. Professor Sklar, what telehealth reforms were enacted during the COVID-19 pandemic, and how have they affected the use of telehealth services?
So that explains why we wrote the article, because what's happened since the pandemic were a number of Medicare telehealth flexibilities back in March 2020 that allowed patients to access telehealth from wherever they are to have appointments with their doctor. And there are several really key flexibilities that have been in place since 2020, and I'll just go through a few of them. So one of the biggest waivers that occurred is that it allowed patients to contact their doctor directly from their home or wherever they might be. And this really made it so they didn't have to go to a doctor's office or originating site. They didn't have to live in a rural area or an area that had a health professional shortage. So it really expanded the use for Medicare beneficiaries to use telehealth, especially during the pandemic when it was so difficult to go to the doctor, especially if you were immunocompromised. So this has all been going on for quite some time. And so what's happened is we've become very reliant on these Medicare telehealth flexibilities. So one of the biggest ones is the one I just mentioned, where the ability to not have to go to an in-person visit, but to use telehealth from your home for a doctor's visit. But the other big one is audio only, where you didn't have the proper internet or weren't comfortable using a computer live video interface, you could call your doctor on the phone. So audio only visits are also a very key part of the Medicare telehealth flexibilities. And then the other ones that are part of this package are CMS has expanded the list of eligible providers. So it's beyond just a physician's, that also includes a number of allied health professionals like speech language pathologists and audiologists, physical and occupational therapists. A really key point as part of the Medicare telehealth flexibilities is it allows a waiver of an in-person visit within 6 months of receiving a telebehavioral health visit. And given we have large swaths of our country that are considered mental health deserts, where there is no behavioral health or mental health provider, this has been a key provision in the Medicare telehealth flexibilities to allow for behavioral health access. And then other ones that are very notable are the Acute Hospital Care at Home program. This is a waiver that hospitals could apply to that would allow them to treat patients in their home with inpatient care. And so this particular package has notably been sort of segmented off because there's so much infrastructure needed to develop these acute hospital care at home programs. And then just most recently, the U.S. House passed the Hospital and Patient Services Modernization Act, H.R. 4313, which would extend this particular provision to 2030. And I bring that up because it's just an example of how this constant renewal of these Medicare telehealth flexibilities that sometimes does not happen, as we saw in the most recent government shutdown at the end of September, is causing so much strain and uncertainty that these individual packages, such as the Acute Hospital Care at Home program, are coming more to the forefront to get us out of this cycle. But in a nutshell, those are the Medicare telehealth flexibilities, with really the key provision being that Medicare beneficiaries could access telehealth from their home and they could access it over the phone, and it would include a number of different providers beyond just physicians.
So, looking at the government shutdown, what were the implications of that for access to telehealth? And then, what's the current state of telehealth rules?
So since March 2020, when these waivers or flexibilities for Medicare to cover telehealth were first introduced, there's been this idea of the telehealth policy cliff. And so this actually happened for the first time in the most recent government shutdown, where my co-author and I say that telehealth was really a victim of this budget impasse, because as a result, all these flexibilities were just suspended. Providers didn't know if they were going to be reimbursed by telehealth for seeing patients. So there was an immediate drop. And there was a fantastic analysis out of Brown University School of Public Health that found that there was a 24% drop from in traditional Medicare patients having telehealth visits just within the first 2.5 weeks in October, so like right after the government shutdown. And then in some states, like Florida and New York, the study found there was a 40% drop. So it was very rapid. And then I do have to say, within my work at the Arizona Telemedicine Program, We're talking just about the shutdown here, but in the months preceding the shutdown, we would have a plethora of calls from providers and patients asking whether they can or should schedule telehealth appointments. Should there be a government shutdown? It really led to a lot of uncertainty, a huge amount of disruption of continuity of care. And this was for a relatively short period of time. There wasn't an immediate effect.
You say in your article that telehealth advocates have typically endorsed payment parity for telehealth services. Why has that been a policy focus and where does it stand?
Yes, this has actually been, I think, a shift now with seeing the disruption that occurred with the recent government shutdown. And then, as we know, we're about to face another potential government shutdown at the end of January. And these extensions are very short. They're 90 days, as much as 6 months, but they haven't been the 2-year extension that we saw previously back in 2023. So I think that's why advocacy groups such as the American Telemedicine Association and the American Medical Association really are not using payment parity as much as they have in the past. And the focus has been much more on the term fair reimbursement. And I think that's just a reflection of how far telehealth has come to be integrated into our healthcare system and the reliance on it. So it really is what the nutshell of our article is about, where it's permanence over parity. And so that's where it stands now in terms of, I think, advocacy groups going forward is really wanting to get away from the disruption of care and uncertainty that having the Medicare telehealth flexibilities creates when it's being tied to these much larger budget bills, and instead have, if not permanent, which is being proposed and what we propose, then at least 2 to 5 year, much longer extensions to avoid what we saw most recently in the last government shutdown. The other example beyond advocacy groups is what the states are doing. So at the states, we mentioned this in the article, only about half the states have payment parity. And there's large variations in terms of how states cover telehealth, whereas all states and District of Columbia cover telehealth if there's a live video audio visit, but it may not be at the same rate as in-person care. So there's all kinds of examples and looking at how to think about reimbursement for telehealth under Medicare that could break down the different modalities, the live video audio only, remote patient monitoring, asynchronous visits. There are ways to think about the types of care, whether it's primary, behavioral health, or specialty care. It may not need to be exactly the same or identical as in-person rates. And I think that would help, my co-author and argue that would help reduce what is the CBO estimate for how much it costs for these Medicare telehealth flexibilities to be renewed. And that's really at the core of this paper, the elephant in the room is the estimates are as much as $4 billion to renew these Medicare telehealth flexibilities that we've been talking about. And if we didn't have payment parity, that number could be, I would say, much more fungible in terms of how much the cost could actually be, much more flexible. And perhaps that could get Congress over the finish line because there is such strong bipartisan support for telehealth to actually make it a permanent part of Medicare reimbursement and move away from having it tied to these larger budget bills.
So, do you think some of these alternative approaches to reimbursement could support increased efficiency and tap into telehealth's potential benefits for competition?
Yes, absolutely. I think that's very exciting and it's really overdue. I've actually been working in the telehealth space since far before the pandemic, since 2010. And for the longest time, we've been talking about telehealth's promise to achieve greater access, reduce costs, improve quality. And I think over the past 5 years, since Medicare has been reimbursing for it, we've really been able to see the evidence there that it can do that. And one of the biggest factors, we mentioned this in the article, is that it allows the national competition for providers to exist. So we're not just patients can select a provider beyond just who is in the closest proximity to them. And if we could slow down the consolidation that's been happening in healthcare, that could have a real impact on competition and providers having pay for patients, patients getting exactly the provider that they want. If we're really trying to address the cost of healthcare and where telehealth could help, it will be on reducing this consolidation that's occurring. And part of the reason that can occur is because we don't have the broader market of competition. And we really highlight the ability for telehealth to do that in the piece. And then relatedly, not tying it to this fee-for-service payment parity model and getting more into value-based care, alternative payment models, I think you can really see the benefits of telehealth to manage chronic conditions, to coordinate care, to have just regular access to care that we can't necessarily do with our current model. And it just fits so much better with more flexibility. And I think one initiative that we could focus on right now is that the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid just launched the ACCESS model, the Advancing Chronic Care with Effective Scalable Solutions. And that's really looking at where telehealth can fit into the broader care continuum with visits, remote patient monitoring, monthly payment ties to improved outcomes. And I think this is the real way forward where telehealth can see a real difference in innovating healthcare delivery. And it's not going to be this tit for tat. This was an in-person service. This was a telehealth service. It's going to cost this much. It's going to be much more about holistic care that really will achieve some better outcomes and hopefully lower the cost with improving the access to care that we've been talking about for so long.
Finally, what telehealth policy options is Congress looking at today? And do you think that long-term standalone telehealth financing legislation has a reasonable chance of succeeding?
That's a great question. I think a lot of us in the field have been excited when we saw the acute hospital care at home plan finally get passed by the House. As we know, very few bills are actually getting passed by Congress right now. That's part of the reason that these Medicare teleflexibilities have been part of broader budget bills. But I think there's so much bipartisan support that, and there's so much potential to reduce the rising cost of healthcare. It really parallels in many ways the ACA subsidies discussion that's happening right now. And I do think there could be some potential, and it might be something where the acute hospital care at home program leads the way. It's a very, very popular program. It can show a huge reduction in cost, high quality of care, high patient satisfaction. And then maybe next would in line could be something like the Telehealth Modernization Act. That would be a 2-year extension of Medicare telehealth flexibilities. The other independent telehealth bill is the Connect Act. That's been introduced over and over again since 2016. Again, incredibly broad support, but it doesn't seem to be able to move forward. And that would make all the Medicare teleflexibilities permanent. So perhaps that's too high of an aim, but I do think something like the Telehealth Modernization Act that would extend the flexibilities for 2 years and importantly separate the reimbursement from the larger budget bill would be potentially very achievable, and especially if there's an adjusted CBO score that maybe isn't based on a payment parity model.
Thank you, Professor Sklar.